Back again for the Mike and Mike Off Air podcast. Mike O'Neill there.
And Mike Pesto there.
See, I mixed it up a little bit. I had to think.
That was hard. Man.
All right, so I like the idea of hijacking the conversation out of the gate, and maybe you can do it next time, but I have something. Were your ears burning earlier this week? Because I talked about you on the air.
Oh, what did you do?
Well, I brought up our podcast number 10.
Uh-huh.
Where, if you remember, that was the one where you talked about fitness and health. And
yes.
I did a lot of listening. But apparently not as much as I should have as far as recovery is concerned. I bring that up because you probably know I'm involved with directing this production at the Ice House.
I do.
A haunting at the Ice House.
Yep.
So one of the facets of it is we're actually using the entire theater for this experience. It actually starts outside the theater, providing it doesn't rain, in which case we have contingency plans. But the tour of the theater starts outside. Act two, as we're calling it, is going to be in the main lobby, where we're kind of turning into a makeshift museum, where we've found some genuine artifacts around the ice house over the years, because it used to be a legitimate ice house.
It was.
So we found counterweights and ice hooks and all sorts of very interesting stuff.
Ice housey things.
Exactly. So I was in the process of moving some things around in that space to make it look more like a museum, and there's this huge counter there. And there was nobody in the building at the time. Like, I got to move it from this end of the building to the other side. Let me... Oh! I pulled...
Pushed.
Muscles kicked. In my biceps, triceps, pecs, and I mentioned on the air, I should have been paying more attention during that particular podcast to find out, in a situation like that, when you overdo it, what is the best way to recover so you don't feel like you can't lift your arms up afterwards?
Well, unfortunately, once one strains oneself and once does it, that's the recovery. It's not you. Leave the muscles alone is really all you can do at that point. There's things like glutamine and other things out there that can help with recovery that'll make things recover a little faster.
Okay.
Creatine is good, but branched chain amino acids are good. But when the damage is done, it's just time. It's just your muscles have to replenish. So you do the damage, but the good news is the muscles come back a little stronger, a little bigger.
So the next time I have to move that big monstrosity, it shouldn't be quite as painful.
And probably work smart and not hard next time and call some friends.
And I remember, I don't know if you mentioned this in the podcast, but something about stretching ahead of time you take on an activity like that, which I, again, didn't do that either.
No, stretching is the deal. I mean, even when my son and I have a mobile DJ business, I'm still working occasionally before we even load into the car. All right, let's stretch. Legs, stretch back, because that's what we're lifting with. And otherwise, I'm going to be hobbling through the day, and that's not a good look. So, yeah.
So it's going to be ibuprofen and just resting. At this
IBs
point.
Is key. Yeah, they work so much better than Tylenol in terms of intramuscular stuff.
Oh, good to know.
They work so much, much better. If you have a flu, if you have ibuprofen, Tylenol is key. But if it's muscular, it's all about ibuprofen.
All right. Well, sticking with the whole vein of a haunting at the ice house, how about we get into the spirit of the season? Scariest blank of all time. And however you want to approach that, whether it was a TV show you saw, a movie, maybe it was a haunted experience you went to, maybe Hobbs Grove, which I still have never been to Hobbs Grove. I've heard so much great things about it, but I've never actually done that experience. And again, since I'm kind of blindsiding you with this.
I've done weddings there, actually. They actually do weddings there, not in the Halloween band. They've got a wedding venue there.
But oh, I thought maybe they would do like a Halloween-themed wedding. Now, that would be interesting.
I haven't done the Halloween there. I hear it's legend. Although, back in the day, for those of you that have been in the area for a long time, Satterstrom's was the place to go for Halloween in Reedley. It was incredible. Mike Satterstrom and his wife had a beautiful, also ironically, wedding venue from the back of their house down to the Kings River, which was gorgeous. I did so many weddings there, but they did Halloween like no other. I mean, crazy out there. They had a haunted house which would scare the blank out of you. It was nuts. Chainsaws, The whole nine. I mean, there was the low key haunted house, and there was the ones that only the crazy people that loved to get the heck scared out of them went into, because it was off the chain. So that was a place I looked forward to every Halloween. It was great. There was a haunted hayride. It was a lot of fun. I haven't done Hobbs though, but I hear it's the industry standard in the South Valley.
And not only the South Valley, it consistently makes the lists as far as the best haunts in all of California. Top 10 like every single year. So I don't know why I have not been yet, because I love those experiences. I mean, heck, that's why I'm doing the one at the Ice House, which is not quite a quote-unquote traditional haunt, although there are aspects of it that are. It's almost more of like a history lesson and then some lore mixed in. But as far as movies, it's funny that we brought this up, is we were talking about this in the hallway just the other day.
You know mine.
And the one that I've got an old school and I guess a new school one. The new school one is The Pope's Exorcist.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's horrifying.
It is, when you know that it's based on a true story. Uh-huh. And my thinking is maybe only 10, 15% of it at the most is actually true. But as you're watching it, my mind is thinking, oh, I bet this is like 99.98% exactly the way it happened.
Yeah.
And it gets into the aspect of the church having been involved with exorcisms, and the one particular exorcism that is a particularly terrifying demon, basically, that takes over a child. Mm. So you get that mix into it, kind of like the original Exorcist, where Linda Blair played a younger girl. This is a boy that gets possessed, and the things he does as this demon. And yeah, I had a hard time sleeping that night. Well,
I can only imagine, because as you well know, mine is the actual original mm-hmm. Exorcist that I saw way too young. Way too young, cradle Catholic.
Okay.
With all that entails and all of the beliefs that were intact at the time when I saw that movie. Horrifying, man. I mean, one of my favorite jokes has been throughout my entire life, you're going to need an old priest and a young priest to fix that, Pesto. That's, you've got a problem there. That movie was just, I mean, it brought to life what you had thought about. Gosh, I wonder, I've heard about, you know, the demons possessing people. Well, we got a good look at what that looked like. And it was very, very well done. And I had a heck of a time sleeping the whole rest of that week. That was a scary movie for me. The other scary movie was, it was because there wasn't a whole lot of, there was no special effects contained within it. And that was the Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
My wife and I allowed ourselves to be in the moment. We allowed ourselves to be in that. I have my hands over my face right now, only allowing myself to see exactly what he saw in the movie camera, and that's what we allowed ourselves to live with it. And that was a scary movie for us. We watched that, and it was right at the end. And we were watching it in bed. And we almost fell out of the bed. And then we turned the light off and tried to sleep and just heard everything, mm-hmm. nothing. And the movie was very effective. It did a very good job of making my imagination see the movie. 80% of that movie was in your head,
yeah.
Because everything to the left, above, below, and to the right of the screen is where the movie was happening.
Yeah.
And that's terrifying.
I used that movie, especially the last 5 minutes, if you've seen it, when they actually get to the Blair Witch house, as motivation for one of the aspects of A Haunting at the Ice House, which I invite everyone to check it out. It's going to be technically Act 2 of that experience. But I have two stories about both of the movies that you mentioned. First, The Exorcist, the original. That's the scariest movie I've never seen. And I say it's the scariest movie I've never seen because I remember as a kid, my mom and dad, my aunts and my uncles in the kitchen when we went to go visit my cousins, and they were talking about the movie. And all the other kids, all my other nephews, my sister, they were all playing in the backyard. But for whatever reason, I was there in the front room. They didn't know that there was still a child in the house.
Whoops.
And I was listening to my mom specifically talk about the movie. and how it wasn't necessarily based on a true story, but she had heard of things like that happening. And to this day, I refuse to see the movie because of my mom's description of it. So it can't possibly be as scary as what it is for a 10-year-old hearing his mom being terrified of the movie, which I don't think my mom has ever seen either.
If mom's scared of it,
yeah,
and you're 10.
I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, my curiosity got the better of me. I'd heard so much about this, that, and the other thing, and I had to watch, and I was like, oh, my God. I can't even imagine how they thought some of these things up, but it was very, very effective. And the makeup on Linda Blair, holy mother, terrifying.
And then with Blair Witch Project, when I worked at a radio station in Peoria, Illinois, there was this town nearby called Bartonville. Uh-huh. And up until very recently, there was a Bartonville State Hospital there on the premises. Now, it shut down years ago when most of the state hospitals did back in the 40s and 50s and very early 60s. But it was a state mental hospital. And on the whole campus, there was one building which they turned into a country bar, basically. And it was a country station that I worked at. So they allowed us to have a screening of that movie
there
at the bar, knowing you were on the property of a decommissioned insane asylum surrounded by woods.
Nice.
So... yeah.
you were inviting all things evil to you were, I dare you, unspoken. Yeah.
We would watch it, and then there were three cemeteries around that facility as well, and they were all people who were at that hospital who had passed away over the years.
Nice.
And then we watched it again.
Oh, my goodness. Scary stuff. Scary stuff.
So that's a couple of the movies. The other one that I saw not quite as recently was the second Conjuring movie.
Never saw that one.
That is one, to this day, probably has the scariest scene I've ever seen. In fact, you've heard the Conjuring saga movies. There was The Nun, and then The Nun 2, which recently came out. I'm convinced that they came up with those two movies because of this one scene in the second Conjuring movie where they're in the Warren's house, and I forget the name of the woman who's in the house, but she walks in this room, and there's this oil painting of this nun there, and it's this dark office area, and at one point she looks back, and the nun's picture is no longer in the picture, and then she shows up in the room.
Nice.
I mean, I'm not doing the scene justice, but to this day, if that movie is on and that scene is on, I will watch it, but I will watch it with one eye closed.
Yeah. It was well done. The other movie for me was I was always a science fiction fan. I enjoyed them because I knew that this can't happen. There's not, most of the sci-fi movies you watch, they're either so far in the future or so contrived that,
yeah,
that this isn't the first, not the second, not the Tom Cruise one, but the first War of the Worlds.
Really?
It's a scary movie when you're 10.
I would imagine.
And I saw that for the first... My dad let me come in and watch that with him, and my mom watched that. I almost wish he hadn't at the time because the Martians were coming, man. They were coming, and that just brought to life a philosophy, an understanding that I had never had. I never thought that something could come from off the Earth to get us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done pretty well for the time. I mean... The one that the most recent War of the Worlds was 15 times more horrifying because it was more graphic, but the first one's lack of graphicness was still terrifying. The way just the way it happened.
You
for
set
me.
Up the premise, and if you do that well enough, you don't need the special effects as much.
No. But then the whole idea of the natural germs of the Earth taking over, and that's how it actually resolves, and the Martians end up dying from that. It's like, okay. Well, that was pretty well done, too, and scary in its own way, but
yeah,
that movie was tough.
How much have you read about or probably not recall, is probably well before you were born, the radio drama?
I've listened to every second of it. I have it recorded at home.
I've never heard it, but one of the classes that I took years ago, my senior year, maybe my first year at community college, we discussed it quite a bit. And it was a radio class that I was in, and people who didn't hear the disclaimer at the beginning of the show, basically. Because that was back when radio, a lot of it was, and you can go back and listen to, go on YouTube, you can find old videos of those radio shows where it was a half-hour drama or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And this was that. But they had a disclaimer at the very beginning that says this is a dramatization, not to be taken seriously and all that. But then if you missed that.
But it was very short.
It sounded very much like we're breaking in with live news coverage. This is actually happening right now. That's how it was presented.
And it was presented very well for the time. It was presented in the exact same format that news was presented. So anybody that missed the disclaimer from that point forward really did get sucked in and believe it. Because remember, back then, 1930 what?
Something like that, yeah.
Your radio was the big thing in the middle of the living room. There was no TV. That was the thing the family sat around. And so you're sitting there. You come in 3 minutes after it starts, turn it on. Holy mother, what's going on? And it literally sounds for the entire duration of the show like a play-by-play news. It just sounds like news broadcast.
Yeah, unless you turn to another radio station to hear that they're not talking about this, but you don't want to miss the actual coverage. So I would imagine many people just listen to the radio, calling friends of theirs who are also listening to the radio.
Yeah, because I don't think there were that many channels where people were like, oh, look, it's on all the networks.
Yeah.
This is the network. We're listening to the network. And yeah, and that's, I believe, why it was so 100% believable at the time. Very, 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 very well written. Very, very, very well articulated and pulled off.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Was that Orson Welles?
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, and obviously, if you know anything about film, one of the greatest films of all time, Citizen Kane, that was his baby as well.
No, it was written exceptionally well, and they pulled it off like complete pros. Great sound effects, great news break-ins, great people screaming and yelling at all the right time. I mean, you would have believed that Mars had come. Pretty crazy.
Speaking of sci-fi and movies that have been redone, in this case, two or three times, I believe, when the first remake with Donald Sutherland of Invasion of the Body Snatchers came out, I remember I was living in rural Illinois at the time, and there's a station, WGN, in Chicago. Well, they just had, because it was, you know, the remake had come out in mid-70s, I think it was. They aired the original from late 50s, early 60s. Special effects, again, nowhere near as good, but I watched that as a teenager, basically, in a house in Crystal Lake, Illinois. No, not the same Crystal Lake with Jason Voorhees, just in case you're curious. No. Music up a whole other genre. But I was in a house alone watching this huge house. It was a rental for us at the time. And my sister and I were convinced that the house was haunted anyway. So I'm watching this movie, and at that point, the movie ended. My mom and dad had not come home yet, and I'm like, I need to go to bed. I don't want to sleep on the couch because this is the scariest room. The bedroom seemed to be okay, but I had to go from the doorway to my bedroom. And then the whole time I'm lying there on the bed thinking, if you're familiar with the movie, I know there's a pod under my bed right now, but I am not going to look to see if there is.
That's funny.
I could not sleep because I knew if I did fall asleep, well, that was it. The pod was going to take me over.
Yeah, I've forgotten about those movies. Yeah. Those were exceptional movies. That was a truly scary movie, too, because it sucked you into the whole premise, and it was very believable at the time.
And they've done a couple remakes of that. There was the Donald Sutherland one from mid-70s, I believe it was. And then there was another one where I think it was just called Invasion, where it was more taking place at a military base. Yeah. So it's, you know, with the original, it was probably when I saw it, and having seen the trailers for the remake at that point, it grabbed every bit of me and would not let go.
Yeah, I think the originals are almost always the best. Honestly, Jaws 2 and 3, really? 1 and out. Do you have a DVD of Rocky V at your house? Probably not.
No.
Maybe the first one. Maybe the second one. But those were great movies. God, I'd forgotten all about that. Body Snatchers would have to be in my top 3.
Okay. Yeah, and as far as other ones, when you get into the Jason Voorhees, the Michael Myers, it's interesting when you talk about that genre of movies. I know Halloween gets so much credit and deserves a lot of credit for
the first one.
For exactly. But a lot of people don't realize the first Friday the 13th movie with Jason Voorhees. And Kevin Bacon is actually in that movie. He's actually one of the ones that one of the last camp counselors to die. That, I thought, was the precursor for all that. I don't think the first Friday the 13th movie gets anywhere near enough of the credit. Now, it gets a little silly when you have Jason versus Michael versus... Okay. But you go back to the originals, again, realizing the special effects weren't what they were, but again, it's creating that mood, that feeling.
I'm surprised there wasn't a Jason versus Predator. I mean, because, well, they fought everything else.
There was
they?
Alien versus Predator.
Yeah, that's
so
what I'm saying. There was everything else.
I think Chucky got in there somewhere, too.
Nah.
And even the original Chucky movie, just the concept of it, the idea of it, is really cool. And if you allow yourself to buy into it, that's what always gets me, because I have a very active imagination.
That's
if I allow myself to believe as much as I can, then I can be bought in hook, line, and sinker. When it gets a little cheesy with, again, the Chucky, the return of Chucky, the bride of Chucky, and it actually is a bride of Chucky.
Or the leprechaun movies. Really? Come on. I'm Irish, and that made me sick to my stomach. And really, Freddy Krueger, that was a big movie because Freddy crossed into forbidden territory.
Yes.
When you're asleep, you are safe. Don't screw with me when I'm sleeping. And, Freddy did.
Yeah.
In three or four different movies. And that was the thing. You were horrified. All of a sudden, that movie made going to bed terrifying. If I fall asleep,
you're done.
And that was a great premise.
And on that note, have a good night's sleep tonight.
Yes.